Hi, my name is Juno McCoy, and I'm on School Hollywood.
Welcome to the School of Hollywood. Hey, I'm Steve Owens, your host, and before we get into our latest episode, I would like to ask a favor of you, and that is to subscribe to the podcast. Tell five of your friends, and if you have time, write a review. It really does help us. If you have questions on the entertainment business, well, I'd like to get them answered for you. So go to School of Hollywood on Instagram, DM, and I'll see if we can get one of our guests to answer them for you. School is now in session. Hi, this is Steve Owens with School of Hollywood. And today I'm excited, Gino, that you are here because I found out you have not only the new producing side of you, but you also have a music background side of you that's been doing very, very well for yourself.
Thank you. Yeah, I try to keep busy. I think on my music side, I've been doing it for quite a while. And that's what brought me out to Hollywood. And then it just happened to evolve into film. So, I'm recently signed to Sony for worldwide distribution, and I'm signed to BMG on the music publishing side.
Fantastic.
I just completed my first debut feature Hollywood film. So
great. On the music side, you actually worked with one of the best in Hollywood, David Kirschenbaum. And what was that experience like?
It was good, man. It was great working with David. I think I've known David for about 10 years, I think, a decade.
Great. Did you work in digital or did you work in analog in the studio with him?
Both.
Which do you prefer?
Depends on the song. If it's more a ballad and you want something a little bit with much more of a warm feeling, you go analog.
Then I bet you used a Neumann for the microphone then. Probably yeah. U47.
Yeah, we use Neumanns, we use everything. I remember there's a picture with me and David setting me up for vocals, and I had about six different microphones, so you got six different textures from it. So,
and oh, wow,
yeah, it's a technique we use, but I've used all different types of microphones. Neumann's really good. U57's really good. I've used that one and everything else.
Well, I instead of the six or seven microphones, I think I would have gone with the AutoTunes mic mod as a plug-in.
Well, it's so funny. I was so against AutoTune. I was like anti-AutoTune for the longest time. But like sometimes it works. Sometimes it gives a different texture to it. Depends on the type of song. If you're going into an EDM song or something like that, maybe use some AutoTune for some of the choruses. It gives a good blend to it, but. I have never used autotune because I'm classically trained. I'm a lyrical tenor, so, I sing. So for me, it's basically, I've never really used autotune in the studio because I have a really good natural voice, so.
Exactly. What do you think takes it to make a great record?
Good songwriting, a good voice, and a good producer, and good musicians, really good backing musicians. My musical arranger, musical director was Greg Fillinganes, and he worked with Michael Jackson. So that helped a lot in my last few songs. Having someone like David or Greg, or now I'm also working with Charles Pierre, who used to work with London Beat. Having a good producer on board that knows music, that knows how to not only mix, but plays instruments and knows music well, knows chords, knows vocally what to do with a voice, and knows exactly what the industry is going for right now, helps a lot.
So did you have to fight with the producer on your movie to get the songs that you wanted, or did he give in?
Are you talking about the title tracks on my film?
On your own film, yeah.
Oh, well, I was a producer on my film.
I know. Did you have to fight with yourself?
Yeah, I had to fight with myself a number of times to put the songs on. But I think for me, it was it's so funny because my album actually had songs that fit the particular scenes and fit them well. So sometimes you would have some artists that, or some music supervisors that would try to fit a particular song in a scene and it doesn't work. Well, I wasn't doing that. So for me, it was kind of like my music. I had so much different types of music because I'm so versatile, because I don't like sticking to one genre. I like doing different genres. And, that's one of the reasons why I never signed with a record label when I first came out to Los Angeles, because they wanted to push me in one direction and I wanted to be open. So it was tough for me to be with a label at that time because they're very one-dimensional at that time, going back 10 years ago. So for me, I really appreciated the fact that I was a producer on this movie as well, and I was also the director, and played even a role of a music supervisor because I'm the one that slotted the music in the particular scenes because I knew exactly what would fit in those scenes and fit well. So it's very important. Because music and movie, putting the right music and the right score in particular scenes in the movie is very important.
Absolutely. I actually did music supervision on one of Adam Sandler movies. Oh, nice. It's very, very important in it. So tell me, what's the name of your new movie and what's it about?
Lumina. It's Latin for the lights. And it's about a young playboy who's in love, who gets his love of his life taken away from him, basically abducted by aliens. And he goes down this whole rabbit hole of conspiracy theories and, you know, goes into depression. And his friends come in and try to get him out of it. And they go looking for her and they get in a lot of trouble.
Sounds interesting. And you shot it in Morocco, of all places. Why right. Morocco?
Well, at first I was going to shoot it in Malta.
Okay.
Because our producer and our good friend is Maltese, and he's also produced on the project with us, David Seychelles. And he is a very good friend of my mom and a very good friend of the family. And he's also an investor and entrepreneur. And my mother worked at RBC, so she worked in finance. She was a director at RBC in Canada. So they put together all the financing for this movie and the slate of movies that we're doing. And, you know, he's Maltese, and Malta is a great filming location. The only problem with Malta was there was no desert, and it was difficult to get the right studio to build these sets because, you know, we had over 50,000 square feet of sets to build.
Wow.
You know, it was big for our production designer. It was big for our art department. It's a very big set build. So we thought about Tunisia, and, you know, I'm a big Star Wars fan, so I wanted to shoot in Tunisia. And Tunisia didn't have the stage available at that point in time. We were going to use a convention center over there to shoot. And it wasn't available for when we were supposed to shoot. So I had a look at Morocco. And Morocco has a very rich cinema history. You know, from Ridley Scott to Scorsese to a lot of the greats shot in Morocco. A lot of great movies were shot there. Kingdom of Heaven and so forth. And they had the studios. They basically had the sound stages to accommodate our bills. And in the back of our stage where we went and we shot at Klaus Studios was the Kingdom of Heaven set, where they shot Kingdom of Heaven.
Yeah, yeah.
And on our sound stages or in our particular studio, Klaus Studios, where we shot the movie and built the sets, you know, there were props from Gladiator, props from Troy. You know, Maximus's cage from Gladiator. You know, I shot basically in a canyon where Scorsese shot Kundun, where Babel was shot with Brad Pitt. You know, so there's different places. Like, I had so many different locations I shot. I shot there. I shot in Wazazat. I shot in the High Atlas Mountains. Extreme temperatures and everything else. And then I shot also in Marrakesh, the road to Agdez, and also in Agafay in the desert dunes. And that's a rolling dune. So I shot in Morocco because they had the stages. They had locations that could double for California because certain parts do look like Los Angeles and California and the mansions. And also the crews are just as good as the crews in Los Angeles.
Were you able to get any kind of tax credits or anything like that at all?
Yeah, their cash rebates there too is 20% cash rebates.
Fantastic. So you have a little bit of similarity that people are talking about, like Ridley Scott. Why is that?
My editor and my good friend, Tom Noble, who's an Academy Award-winning editor, he made a comment to me in the editing room saying that I'm like Ridley Scott in the editing room because I remember every shot. I remember every frame. I remember everything that happened. I remember everything that the actors did in that particular scene. And essentially, I remember the entire film because I cut it in my mind. So I have a photographic memory. So Ridley's the same way. He knows exactly everything that's shot, when it's shot, and how it's shot. So
with a photographic mind, do you remember any particular points that you wish you'd have gone back and shot it differently?
Of course. I'm a perfectionist. I mean, I always think I could shoot it better. You know, I have, it's funny, I have people come and say, oh, that's an amazing shot, you know? And I'm like, yeah, I think we could do better on it. But you know, if I get it, I get it. I get it, I get it, and I move on. I'm not one of those directors that, you know, I have an amazing take, and then I always do one after that anyways for insurance. And I also love doing improv and work with the actors in improv because I understand the process. I understand all the acting techniques. I'm an actor's director. But, you know, if it's good, if it's great, if it's a great or amazing take and I get my insurance on it, that's it, I move on. But sometimes when you look back at it, I'm like, yeah, I could have got this. I could have done that, you know, but that's me. You know, because I see every detail. So that's the difference, right?
Hey, there's nothing wrong with being a perfectionist. As long as you just don't keep going and going and going and going.
Yeah, I know. It's tough to unsee it. But, you know, because of budgetary constraints and because you're trying to make your day and, you know, you have so much other factors that go into making a movie that you have to deliver it on time, you can't really spend that umpteen amount of time that you want to spend on a movie. So you have a set piece of time. You got to finish it and you got to do it, you know, so.
So as far as your plan for the film, are you doing festivals first or are you going straight to theaters or what's the plan?
We might do some festivals. I think I entered into Fantastic Fest because, you know, John Wick and Don't Breathe and a number of other movies in that genre category, like my movie, also entered in there and did really well. I may look at AFM, I may look at Berlinale, it depends. Or, you know, I have interest from distributors right now. And big sales agents, so we'll see. I think ultimately I'm going to show it to the studios first, and whoever bites and whoever has the best plan for it with us and the best offer, I'm going to go with, most likely.
Fabulous. So what do you have coming up next that you're going to be working on?
I just signed on to a World War II picture it's based on a true story in World War II that I'm directing and going to produce. It's based on a Jewish Iraqi family in the Middle East, so that's going to be an interesting one. It's a period piece, and I'm really excited for that one because my grandfather's Jewish, so I always heard about a lot of, you know, history about World War II and the Holocaust. So I think it's going to be a really good one for me to do. I think the other one I have coming up as well, too, is with Michael Sloan, who is the producer and creator on Equalizer and Equalizer 2 with Denzel Washington. And he also did the Equalizer TV series. So I wrote a script with Michael, so I'm directing his next movie. So that's another big one, too.
Fantastic. What advice would you have for a new director producer since you just completed your first one? What pitfalls to watch out for? And, you know, where to cut corners?
I would say don't trust everybody in the industry. That's the first thing. Second thing I would say is research everything to death. Understand the industry, understand the business, understand exactly every facet of it. What a casting director does, what the producers do, what sales agents, what distributors look for, what your camera team does, what your DP does. You know, research cinematography, research editing, how to go about the editing process, how to go about the entire production process in terms of, like, you know, production management, schedules, budgeting. And make sure you research everything to death before you get into it, because, you know, even when you're well researched, you still learn every day in this industry.
You know, absolutely.
So for me, I would always tell the young upcoming filmmakers to, you know, trust your gut at times, but also make sure you research everything that you're going into, because you can never be overly prepared for a film, no matter what, going into the industry, because sometimes you have young filmmakers that come into the industry that basically are taken advantage of, and, you know, there's a lot of discrimination, there's a lot of other things in the industry that, you know, you face, and obstacles that you face that you need to overcome, and the way you overcome that is by making sure you get in those meetings, get the experience, go on set, see how it is, you know, talk to people, talk to everyone about it, get their opinions, you know, go out there, go to the festivals, like, you know, read as much as possible, watch as much movies as possible, try to shoot your own short films and music videos. I think that commercials, music videos, and short films really help a filmmaker in terms of, like, you know, learning the process, learning how things work, go shoot a short film or a music video in the non-union world and see how that works compared to union. Learn about your unions, like the SAG, WGA, everything else. That's what I did because, you know, I come from like, you know, I graduated from University of Toronto, so I have my degree from there. So, you know, I went and got my post-secondary education and, you know, from Canada. And, you know, even that, you know, that helped me prepare to research and really get myself prepared for film because it's a marathon and it takes a community to do it too. And you have to have people that really trust in and people that you can collaborate with in order to get that film done. And it's very important to have trusted individuals in your heads of department. That's what I would say to young filmmakers, because they help make your film.
As far as on your film financing, did you have to attach actors first on that before the money came in, or
what was the situation? We had the money in first.
Great. That doesn't happen much in Hollywood.
It's very rare. But that's a luxury. That's the luxury of having a mother that's a former, like, you know, she senior executive of Royal Bank of Canada, director of Royal Bank, who was one of the top in charge there and had connections in the industry. But also it helps the fact that I am a visionary filmmaker and that I'm very creative. So, I mean, and I had great ideas. So the script was a really great one. So I think, you know, having that content, I know it's very difficult these days to actually get something financed and also to do it during COVID. So we did the impossible. We shot and completed a film during the height of COVID with so many other films shutting down in Hollywood. So many of my other fellow filmmakers that were on films, you know, with the big studios that got shut down, but we still completed and shot this film. So, I mean, it took a lot of, you know, faith, believing in God and working hard and never giving up. And that's another thing I would also tell young filmmakers too, is never give up. You know, no matter what they tell you, no matter what people say to you, you know, you're going to get the most criticisms. You're going to face a lot of things, discrimination, like, you know, people doubting your ability. And I think, you know, you need to overcome that and realize that, you know, if God set out a path for you, you need to stay on that path and complete what you're doing, because that's what we did. And I was actually the first filmmaker to shoot a sci-fi film in Africa and build the biggest sci-fi sets in Africa.
You know, that's amazing. And congratulations on that.
Yeah. And, you know, the Moroccan news covered me in terms of, because I made history. I didn't even know I made history until they told me afterwards that I did it, because no other filmmakers would endeavor to do that, because most sci-fi films are shot in Europe. You know, one was shot in South Africa. District 9 was mostly exterior sets. You know, no interiors were built. Like, we shipped over Vacuform and stuff over there to build these sets from the U.S., and we built them. And it was the first time it's ever been done in Moroccan cinema history. And it's the first time it's ever been done in African cinema history. And like I said, just so many big filmmakers I've shot in Africa, but they never built sci-fi sets the size that we did and that I envisioned. So, I mean, I guess, you know, I was really happy that I was a part of history. And I think that's another thing I'll tell people too. Don't ever say, or young filmmakers, don't ever think that if someone says it's impossible to do, that you can't do it. I think anything's possible. Anything you put your mind to is possible. You know, like years ago, people would say, oh, why don't you shoot this in the US or Canada or Europe, UK, Australia, New Zealand, where most of the sci-fi stuff is shot. No one ever thinks about shooting sci-fi in Africa. So I think what I did was I broke that barrier, I think.
That is awesome. Where can people find you on social media?
On Instagram, they can find me on Gino McCoy, GINOMCKOY. Facebook is the same thing. And also, they could also go to the website, luminamovie.com. And also, Lumina Movie is also on Instagram as well. It has its own page for the movie. Thank you so much, Steve. It was a pleasure to be on. Thank you so much for having me. And it was a pleasure. Yeah. And I hope it helps some young filmmakers, because, you know, coming from live experience and going through that, I hope it will help them in terms of their career path.
Well, I hope you gained some good insight in today's latest episode of School of Hollywood. If you haven't listened to the previous episodes, please do so now, or subscribe to the podcast and get the latest updates when we release them. If you have any questions about Hollywood you'd like answered, DM us at School of Hollywood on Instagram. Keep following your dream.